I'm joined on the line by Gary Anderson, whose amazing new book, The Gwauss Affair, is out now. Gary, how are you today?
I'm doing very well, Stuart, thank you.
This is good to hear. This is very good to hear. I've been reading a biography of William Burroughs, and I've been reading your book at the same time, and trust me, it's been getting a little confusing. This is a great book, but I should put the Burroughs down because it feels like he had a big hand in writing it. How did the Gwauss Affair come into being?
Well, actually, there's nothing too mysterious about it, no pun intended. I wanted to try my hand at some mystery, and this is my third novel, but it's my first attempt at what you would call noir, I guess. And I wanted to do that, but I just didn't know how to come at it straight, I guess. I decided in the end that I wanted it to be like a genre bender and combine elements of different genres. So when I started, I didn't really set any parameters for myself. I like noir. I love the old black and white movies and the books. So that was kind of the basis, my starting point. But I just gave myself free rein, and that's what ended up happening. The Gwauss Affair is what is the end product.
The rein is pretty free. Very free in some places. I have not read many books that involve private investigators and very intelligent cows. And I was slightly thrown, because I'm looking at the back of this book thinking, he did what? Yes.
Yeah.
tell us a bit about this book.
I'm not really sure where the intelligent bovines came from. I remember years ago thinking, I was thinking about writing a short story about, a vegetarian community being, overrun by human-eating cows or something. I just thought that the irony of that was kind of funny, and I don't know, I guess it stuck with me. And then I was doing some research on genetics and whatnot, and I just thought, it would be kind of funny or kind of interesting if cows became intelligent because they're so, renownedly unintelligent, that to me it just seemed like a good place to start.
It's a very good place to start. I love this book because it does all the things that most books that I've read in my job, and I'm a literature professor, so...
Uh-huh.
Most of the books I read in my job are pretty cut and dry, and you can pull them apart with a fork and, give the kids the bits you want to shovel down them. This thing, good grief. I'm reading it and I'm thinking, I'm not letting the kids anywhere near this. This is too good for them. You can't pull this apart. This just works. I am amazed to hear you say that this is your first go at mystery and noir, because I'm reading it thinking, he must be writing more of this. There's got to be more to this Gary Anderson guy. Where's he been hiding all these years? So can you tell us a bit about you? Because people are going, who is this guy?
Yeah, I'm a literature major as well. So I studied, I did my thesis in 18th century blank verse. So I actually began in poetry, and I started in, rather classic literature. But then I ended up writing, a couple of what you would call literary books, I suppose. But even those have, moments of oddness, I suppose, where I also let my imagination run wild. So after two of those, I felt like I do like literary books, but I felt a little bit constrained by by them, which is odd, but which actually is an odd thing to say because, you know, mystery is more formulaic than actual literary books in general, but I don't know, something about the literary books I found a little bit constraining. So the mystery, and like I said, I'd always enjoyed mystery, and I just felt it would be interesting to try something, but I didn't want to be, I didn't want to write just a mystery, sort of straight up, so I just added my own kind of twist to it.
It's a big twist.
Yeah.
How does a guy from Canada end up in Korea for 10 years and then suddenly living in, of all places, central New Jersey? you must
that
have
is a good question.
Must have moved around a bit, is all I can think.
Yeah. I mean, after I took my degree, I was... Well, basically, I was looking for a way to pay off the student loan, of course. But Korea, it provided an opportunity for working in educational publishing, which is what I did there. And then that actually just opened up a few doors. I met a few of our clients there, and one of them ended up just basically offering me a job, and my wife, who's Korean, we decided that we would move back here. Our kids were bilingual at the time, but their English wasn't really great, so we decided we would try and get them into an English-speaking environment for a while, and we ended up here, and turns out we like it here, so we're here to stay for a while anyway.
Oh, that's fair enough. I mean, I ran central New Jersey past an American friend of mine, and he said, he lives where? Why would you willingly live there? And I'm thinking, all these Americans and their bloody central New Jersey jokes, the rest of the world just doesn't get it. All I can say is, if you're happy there, be happy there. Who cares?
Well, I've heard the, you know, all the jokes and stuff. In fact, I heard them before I came here. But there are pockets of New Jersey that are very nice. I mean, I guess we're lucky enough to live around the Princeton area, which is a nice area. So, so we like it here. But there are definitely some areas that are a bit rougher. That's all.
Has it been hard going from 10 years in Korea back to, well, North America, is it? Did you have reverse culture shock by any chance?
Oh, I absolutely. I always say to people that the thing that struck me the most, I think, was when I got here, I understood everything everyone was saying. It was sensory overload. I mean, you know, I don't know if how well you speak Chinese.
Not at all. Not at all.
See, I had the same experience in Korea. All of my colleagues were either American or Korean American or Canadian or Australian. And our day-to-day, you know, work was in English, so I didn't pick up a lot of Korean. So you learn to become very good at just shutting things out, right? You walk around and you can't really understand much of what people are saying, so you just sort of shut it out. But when I got back here, suddenly, you know, I understood everything everyone around me was saying in public places and whatnot, and it was like a Hitchcock movie or something. The walls were closing in. So that was probably the oddest thing as far as the language aspect of it. But, I mean, I definitely did have some reverse culture shock.
I'm glad it's not just me when I go home. I was beginning to think I was alone in this. No, that's good, that's good.
No, it's an odd thing, that's for sure.
How did you end up getting The Gwas Affair published with Crime Wave Press, which is based in Bangkok? I'm always keen to know how people get their books out there, and this is, I'm getting the impression, it's probably going to be a slightly circuitous route.
Yeah, I mean, it was, well, you know, I knew when I wrote this that it was not going to be an easy sell just because it was a genre bender. And so the big six, I pretty much knew that I wasn't going to have much of a shot with them. I did write the obligatory, queries to a couple of agents who were not at all interested. I'm sure that they didn't see any monetary value behind this book. So I kind of had resigned myself to the fact that I would be, working with small presses. And which is fine because my other two literary novels are the same. I'm familiar with the small press, the independent press. So I knew that it was going to be that route. I didn't realize that, I guess not having explored mystery that much, I didn't realize that a lot of the mystery publishing houses or presses, they seem to like, fairly straightforward, generic kind of mysteries. So I actually had a hard time with this one in some of the small presses too. I did have a number of them who were intrigued enough by it to look at it, but then I remember one specifically, which is a very well established mystery press, writing back to me and saying, "Wow, this is just too far afield for what we do." So I didn't realize that I was going to have, that much trouble with the small presses. So I tried a few of the sci-fi presses because, there's the sci-fi element, but it turns out that science fiction is kind of soft science fiction and it's not what they're really that interested in either. So I found myself in kind of a, between the two and in an odd place. And then one day I had noticed this Crime Wave Press early on in my search, and I liked their website, and I don't, for some reason I really like the their logo, which I think is Tom in his hat.
Could well be.
I liked their logo and I liked their webpage, but at the time they were not accepting submissions from anywhere outside of Asia. This would have been a couple years back. So I thought, won't even bother trying them. But then for some reason I was checking back a year or so later and it turned out that they had opened up. So I thought, I'll try this place. And I got an email back from Tom not too long after I had submitted it, and he really liked it. So I was able to find somebody who, I guess, was willing to take a chance on it, and not too constrained by the formulaic mystery sort of books. So they tend to like anything that's anything that's interesting that is at all crime or mystery related. So in the end, it worked out very well for me. For them too, I hope.
Yeah, well, that's what I like about these Crime Wave Press books is that they are not any one particular thing. It's a very, very reader-driven publishing house,
yeah.
Because they're looking and saying, what can we get people to write for us that we think will sell?
Right.
They're going out and saying, well, what do you think will sell? Well, we'll have that and we'll publish it, because it's
right.
The Gwauss Affair is a classic example of that. I was amazed by it, but I'm sort of thinking, how does this fit into Crime Wave Press? And then I'm thinking, Tom doesn't care. Publish it, it's good.
No, I think that's, to his credit, I think Tom, trusts his gut instincts, and I think he's been around long enough to have good instincts. So the fact that he felt good about it, made me feel good about it, because I understood that he's been around a long time and he's got good instincts. So And I think that's it. I think for him, if it's a good book, they want to publish it. Mm. You know, I don't know. I mean, of course they want to make money, but I don't think that they're driven by the bottom line. Certainly not like the, you know, the large Big Six.
No, nothing's driven by the bottom line like the Big Six.
Right.
Publishing
no, that's right.
Some absolutely stonkingly bad books lately because they think there's money in them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a dinosaur.
It is a bit. The Gwanus Affair is not a dinosaur. It's a very bovine living thing. But what's next for you, Gary?
Well, I actually, you know, since I enjoyed writing this book, and I hope that as a reader, the reader senses that, you know, that I enjoyed writing this book. I think they do, and I hope they do. So I am working on a sequel to this one. It may actually be a prequel. I haven't quite decided about that yet, but I've started mapping out some of the larger story. So there will be, I think, another Cornelius Planck book. I've also got a few literary books from my past. I don't know, I shouldn't call them literary, I guess, but I've got another couple books from that have been sitting in my drawer that need some attention, so I've been trying to find some time to work on those as well. So I am keeping busy, that's for sure.
But that all sounds good to me. Look, the Gwanus Affair is out there now, and it's a corker. It's absolutely brilliant. Gary, look, thank you for taking time out of your very busy day, and I'm sorry, I think I've dragged you out of bed, but it's been wonderful talking to you, and thank you very much for talking to us today.
Thank you, Stuart. Appreciate it.